মাথা শিশুনাম নিদনাম সুধানাম নিশাম্য ঘোরাম পরিতাপ্যমানা ধারুদারবাষ্পকলাকুলাক্ষী থমসন ফয়ন আহ কিরীতমালি The mother of the five children of the Pandavas, after hearing of the massacre of her sons, began to cry in distress with eyes full of tears. Trying to pacify her in her great loss, Arjuna spoke to her thus. Tada suchaste pramrijami vadre yad brahma bandho shira atayan atatayina gandiva muktai vishakai upahare tukram yayat snasya siddhagda putra. O gentle lady, when I present you with the head of that Brahman after beheading him with arrows from my Gandiva bow, I shall then wipe the tears from your eyes and pacify you. Then after burning your son's bodies, you can take your bath standing on his head. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. An enemy who sets fire to the house, administers poison, attacks all of a sudden with deadly weapons, plunders wealth, usurps agricultural fields, or entices one's wife, is called an aggressor. Such an aggressor, though he be a Brahmin or so-called son of a Brahmin, has to be punished in all circumstances. When Arjuna promised to behead the aggressor named Ashwatthama, he knew well that Ashwatthama was the son of a Brahmin. But because the so-called Brahmin acted like a butcher, he was taken as such, and there was no question of sin in killing such a Brahmin son who proved to be a villain. Draupadi, the mother of the five children of the Pandavas, after hearing the massacre of her sons, began to cry in distress with eyes full of tears. Trying to pacify her in great loss, Arjuna spoke thus, O gentle lady, when I present with you the head of that Brahmin, after beheading him with arrows from my Gandiva bow, I shall then wipe the tears from your eyes and pacify you. And after burning your son's bodies, you can take your bath standing on his head. This chapter from the Srimad Bhagavatam is beginning just after that great battle of Kurukshetra, wherein due to the passion of fighting, so many amazing and unusual events took place. Although Dronacharya and Bhishma were very exalted, noble persons and devotees of the Lord, under the influence of the battle, both of them behaved in such a way that is inconceivable to our understanding. Drona, so much hungry for victory, even though he knew well that he was on the wrong side, even though he knew well that he had to lose this battle, because it was he was fighting against the will of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Still, as a warrior, he became so carried away in the battle that with his great power, after he was made commander-in-chief, after Bhishma was put on the bed of arrows, he began to fight so ferociously that he was destroying the entire army of the Pandavas. And although according to military codes, the fighting proceeds after the sun rises, and it must end after the sun set, and according to the proper Kshatriya codes, which he knew well, being the greatest teacher of military arts, it is improper to attack a person less qualified with you than you with weapons that that person has no power to combat. We have seen often that you do not throw a brahmastra unless the person you are attacking has the power to throw a brahmastra. You do not fight with a bow and arrow unless your opponent has a bow and arrow. Generally, if your opponent has a club, you fight with club. If your opponent has nothing but his fists, you fight him with your fists. This is the proper Kshatriya code of honor. But Drona was breaking all codes of honor. He was taking the most terrible, terribly powerful nuclear weapons, and he was attacking soldiers who had nothing but a bow and arrow. And he was destroying them wholesale. And after the sun set, the smell of blood, due to all the people that he was killing, created such a Kshatriya passion in his heart that he just continued the fight through the entire night, not giving any of the soldiers on any time for rest or even to eat or to drink water. And because he was so powerful, he was massacring the armies. It came to pass that the only way the Pandavas had a chance of surviving and being victorious on behalf of Krishna is they had to stop Drona from his massacre. And as long as he was so inspired, as long as he was so enthusiastic to fight, there was no one who could stand before him and stop him. So it was Krishna's plan that we must somehow or other discourage him. And the only thing that will discourage him is the news that his son, his one and only son, Ashwatthama, is dead. Because he loves his son so dearly, he will not be able to fight if he hears that his son is dead. But Ashwatthama had a benediction from Lord Shiva that he could not be killed. So this was a very difficult thing, and Drona knew it. If anyone would have informed Drona that your son is dead, he would have not even considered that it could be true. But Maharaj Yudhisthira was Dharmaraj. He was noted for his nobility, that he had never spoken or even thought from his birth of anything immoral, what to speak of a lie that is not true. When Yudhisthira entered into the gambling arena and he gave his word that if you win, you can have my wife, if you win, you can have all my brothers, if you win, you can have my whole kingdom, if you win, I will go to the forest in exile. And he maintained his word at such a tremendous loss. So no one, when a person is honorable, people trust that person. And amongst devotees, it's very important that in our ordinary activities, especially amongst Vaishnavas, that we are very truthful, very honest, not deceiving, not trying to trick one another through juggling words. Because although sometimes this process is good for getting things done as a management technique, you say one thing which isn't really what you really mean to try to get somebody to do something that they don't want to do, or you say various things which are not exactly the way it is so that you can get what you want from someone, some way, somehow. This is tendency. And immediately, it may have a good effect. But in the long run, it has a disastrous effect. Because if we cannot be very honest, straightforward, and trustworthy in the most basic, ordinary activities of our relationships, then people simply cannot trust you. Even on serious matters, people will question, is this person telling me the truth? What is this person's motive? But if a person is always straightforward, always honest, never trying to play games or tricks with other devotees to fulfill their own aims, then people trust them. And they will trust them in all circumstances, because they improve in themselves. And this movement is based not on management. This movement is not based on the principle of getting things done. No doubt, utility is a principle. But ultimately, the greatest utilitarian principle is when our relationships are based on love and trust. And Srila Prabhupada said this movement will expand on the basis of love and trust. And there cannot be trust without honesty. Srila Rupa Goswami has said that one must be straightforward even in one's most ordinary activities. Straightforward. You tell it like it is. You don't try to get something out of someone by telling them something else, especially amongst devotees. And if we behave like this, people will trust us. Because Yudhisthira had never lied before in his life, everyone knew that whatever he said was true. There was no question. To the extent that Drona, who knew that Shankar gave Ashwatthama the benediction that he would not be killed, he would not be defeated, Krishna knew if Yudhisthira says he's dead, Drona has to believe it. Because Yudhisthira never lies. The power of truth, the power of honor. But Yudhisthira never lied in his whole life. How could he start now? It was against his nature, utterly. Krishna told him to tell a lie. If Krishna comes directly to tell you to tell a lie, then there's some justification. Because what Krishna says is the absolute truth. Krishna is the absolute truth. Whatever Krishna says is the truth. If Krishna says day is night and night is day, then day is night and night is day. But if you say it, you're a liar. Because you are relative, but Krishna is absolute. Param satyam dhimahi. We meditate on Krishna because he is the supreme truth. And truth is whatever emanates from Krishna. Therefore, when Krishna told Yudhisthira to tell this lie, he was requesting Yudhisthira to surrender even his own pride in being truthful for the sake of Krishna's service. And it is explained that Maharaj Yudhisthira's chariot, it never touched the ground because of his never telling a lie, because of his complete honorable morality throughout his life. But in this incident, his chariot fell to the ground. Now the Karmakandis, who read the Mahabharata with the idea of developing in their artha kama dhamma and moksha, economic development, sense gratification, religiosity, and liberation, they say, on the basis of religiosity, that Yudhisthira Maharaj's chariot fell to the ground because he lied on the order of Krishna. But the Vaishnavas, they have a much higher understanding of this principle. Yudhisthira Maharaj's chariot touched the ground because he hesitated to surrender to Krishna. He hesitated in having complete faith that whatever Krishna says is the highest supreme truth. So it is explained that Krishna saw that Yudhisthira was having a real hard time surrendering to telling the first lie in his existence. He didn't recognize that it wasn't a lie, it was Krishna's desire. So Krishna gave him a concession. He said, there's an elephant. Bhima, go kill that elephant. Bhima killed the elephant. That elephant's name happened to be Ashwatthama. So you say that Ashwatthama is dead. It's not a lie. So Yudhisthira approached Drona, who was in his ferocious spirit. And as far as I remember, other people tried to explain to him that Ashwatthama was dead, but he didn't believe it. He said, I will only believe it if Yudhisthira tells me. Now Krishna knows past, present, and future. He's in everyone's heart. So Yudhisthira said, Ashwatthama, the elephant, is dead. But Krishna blew his conch shell so loud just when he said, the elephant. So what Drona heard was, Ashwatthama is dead. And he couldn't believe it. But he had to believe it. So he just didn't want to fight anymore. He lost his enthusiasm. And later, shortly after that, Bhima began to chastise him severely. He started just bringing up facts. There's nothing hurt. There's nothing that hurts more than truth. And there's nothing that gives more pleasure than truth, depending on which truth it may be. If someone lies against you, it doesn't hurt so bad.
But if someone tells truth about something you've done in the past, it hurts a lot. So Bhima was saying, Drona, call yourself great warrior, great Brahmin. You were there when Draupadi was being stripped naked. Why didn't you say anything? Why didn't you do anything? You were there when Shakuni was cheating us in the gambling match. Why didn't you say anything? Why didn't you do anything? He brought up so many incidents of how Drona, due to his affiliation and association with Duryodhana, engaged in so many nefarious, immoral acts. And everything Bhima was saying was true. And that further discouraged Drona from fighting. In fact, he became so discouraged that he decided, I'm going to just resign from this battle. He put in his formal resignation immediately. I'm no longer commander-in-chief. I'm no longer a warrior. I'm going back to my occupation as a Brahmin. And right then and there, with the thought of the loss of his son and all of, and the thought of all of the immoralities he was a part of, he took off all of his armor and his put down his weapons. He sat in his chariot and sat in cross-legged Padmasan, closed his eyes, and entered into a state of samadhi, meditation. Now, Draupadi and Dhrishtadyumna, her brother, they were both born for very specific purposes. Maharaj Drupad and Drona, they were both classmates in their what we may call Gurukul. Drona was a Brahmin, Drupada was a prince who was soon to be king. They became very dear friends. And as they were parting after their graduation, Drupada told Drona, if ever there's anything you need, you come to me because I will be king. So many years went by and Drupada became king. And when you become king, however great and noble you may be, sometimes that tendency to become infatuated is there, because you have so much power, so much prestige, so much influence. And he became a royal, powerful king. And he was a great warrior as well. Meanwhile, Drona, he was living a very simple life. He was so poor, but he and his wife didn't mind utter poverty, because Brahmins are not supposed to mind utter poverty. They are supposed to be content with whatever God provides and go on with their brahminical activities of helping others. But one day their only son, Ashwatthama, was playing with his friends, and his friends said something about milk. But he was so poor, he never tasted milk. He came and said to his mother and father, what is this milk that I'm hearing about from my friends? So they were thinking that we may not mind poverty for ourselves, but at least we should give the basic necessities for our son so that he could grow up nicely. So Drona said to his wife and child that Drupada is my friend. He will give us whatever we want. He has promised. Let us go to his kingdom. So they went before him. Drupada was sitting on his royal throne. Drona and his family were in torn rags in the name of clothes. They asked, Can you help us with some basic necessities of life? And Drupada looked at him. You beggar. You are a beggar. What do I need you for? How will you help me? But you promised. As a child, who takes seriously the promise of a child? Get out from here.
He said this to Drona in front of his own wife and child.
This was great humiliation, terrible humiliation, unbearable.
Because although Drona was a Brahmin, he had a Kshatriya spirit as well. And Kshatriya's dishonor is worse than death. Krishna says that in Gita. So he decided, I must get revenge. So with his good intelligence, Bhishma, who was then acting as the king of Hastinapur, the Kuru dynasty, although he was not allowed to take the position of king, he had to act and do the duties of a king. They were looking for someone to teach the Pandavas and the Kurus military arts. Now, Drona was a disciple of Parashuram. So was Bhishma, but Bhishma didn't have time. So one day when the boys were playing together with a ball, they were children, ball went deep into a well. At that time, Drona appeared, because the boys didn't know how to get the ball from the well. Drona took a ring and threw it down the well. And as it was falling, he took an arrow, and it went through the ring into the ball. And then within seconds, he shot so many arrows, and each arrow stuck into the backside of the other arrow until it was just one long line of arrows going all the way to the top of the well, and then he just pulled them up and gave the ball. And the boys were amazed. They never had seen such archery skills in their whole lives from anyone. It was miraculous. So they went home and spoke to Bhishma and told him, we met somebody, we don't know who he was, but what type of archer he is. And when Bhishma heard, he said, it's Drona, no one else could do it. So he went and he asked Drona to teach them. And Drona taught them. And after they graduated from his school, he said, now it is time to give me Guru Dakshin. And the Dakshin I want is I want you to defeat Draupada's armies, and I want you to bring him to me defeated as a captive prisoner alive. So he sent the Pandavas and the Kurus. First he sent the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra, headed by Duryodhana, Dushasana, and others. And when they declared war against Drupada, Drupada easily defeated all the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra. They were running for their lives. Then he sent the 5 Pandavas. He told Arjuna that your specific duty is to bring Drupada to me alive. And Bhima, Yudhisthira, Nakula, Sahadev, you defeat his armies. They completely routed all of his armies. And although Drupada was a Maharathi, when he fought with Arjuna, Arjuna was so gallant that he just captured him, tied him up, and brought him to Drona. And Drona put his feet on Drupada's head and said, now, who is in a superior position? Now, if you want to live, you have to plead for your life from me. And Drupada was very humiliated. And then Drona said, "This, just let him go. He's like a captive animal. Let this animal go." So Drupada went. But as a Kshatriya, he had to seek revenge. But one thing is, he was so impressed by Arjuna. The way Arjuna defeated him, he was really appreciative of Arjuna's nobility and his skills. So he performed a yajna. He got all qualified Brahmins to perform this yajna. And the yajna, after all of the rituals took place and all of the devotional activities, the last oblation, they chanted mantra. Through this oblation, let a son be born to kill Drona. And from that oblation in the fire, Dhrishtadyumna was born. And then he was thinking that Arjuna is such a wonderful soul. I want him to be my son-in-law. So let a daughter be born who will be the bride of Arjuna. And through the oblation, Draupadi was born of fire. So, as Dronacharya was sitting with his back erect in the Padmasan, meditating on the Supreme Lord, everyone with great reverence was offering their respects to such a great soul who has just relieved himself from the battle. But to everyone's amazement, all of a sudden, Dhrishtadyumna came running at him with such speed that no one could stop him. And before everyone's eyes, he chopped off Drona's head. And even the Pandavas were aghast. Dhrishtadyumna was the commander-in-chief of their army. What have you done? How could you do this? And Dhrishtadyumna said, I have done nothing wrong because I was born to kill him. I was born specifically for that purpose. There's no way I could have refrained from doing this. It was the will of destiny. It had to be done, and it had to be done by me. I was helpless to fulfill my birth and its purpose. So everyone knew this was true. But Ashwatthama, who was fighting in another area of the battlefield, when he came back that night and he heard what had been done to his father, he vowed revenge. So after the Kurus were defeated, the Pandavas were victorious, there was only a very small handful of soldiers left in the Pandava army. And in the Kuru army, Duryodhana had already been defeated and was laying with a broken spine due to the club of Bhima. He was just laying near a pond of water in Kurukshetra. And there was Kritavarma, Kripacharya, and Ashwatthama, and all the other Kurus were dead. And amongst the Pandavas, there was just the five sons of Draupadi, who were just teenage children. And Dhrishtadyumna, and a few others. They were so exhausted that after the battle was over, there was no celebration. There was no victory march. They just wanted to go to sleep. 18 days of terrible, terrible fratricidal war. It was over. Let's just go to sleep. So Krishna, Satyaki, and the five Pandavas, it was their duty to go to Hastinapur to inform just Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, Kunti, and others that the battle was over. So they went to Hastinapur. And the others were sleeping in the tents. And somehow or other, Ashwatthama was just laying in the forest thinking, how will I avenge the death of my father? How? And as he was thinking like this, he saw in the trees an owl. In the middle of the night, there was a nest of birds, a family of birds all sleeping, and the owl just jumped in the nest and killed them all. And he thought, this is the way. While they're sleeping, I will massacre them. So somehow or other, he convinced Kritavarma and Kripacharya to help him.
He was very powerful, very forceful.
And as they were sleeping, they ran into the tents and they just started killing everyone in their sleep. Ashwatthama went to Drishtadyumna and put bowstring rope around Drishtadyumna's neck to choke him. Then he woke him up. And when he woke up, he was in such a situation. And Drishtadyumna said, "Please, if you're going to kill me with your arrow. Kill me with an arrow. Let me die as a Kshatriya. Don't strangle me like some sort of a... It is not the proper death of a Kshatriya." And Ashwatthama said, "Because what you have done to my father, you have no right to die as a Kshatriya." And then he choked him to death. Mahabharata is much different than Vrindavan Leela, no doubt. But still, it is our Guru Maharaj's instruction that we must hear and become purified by all of Krishna's Leelas. They have a great importance in our lives. So, then he killed the five sons of Draupadi. She had one son from Yudhisthira, one son from Bhima, one son from Arjuna, one from Sahadeva, and one from Nakula. And they were all killed while they were sleeping. And they were all very young, just teenagers. And when the news reached Draupadi that her five little children were massacred in their sleep, she naturally, as a mother, began to cry in distress with eyes full of tears. Now one may ask, how is this? And why is this? Krishna tells us in Gita, asochyanan vasochastvam pragyavadam shabhashate gathasam gathasam cha nanu sochandi pandita, that a wise person laments for neither the living nor the dead. Nahanyate hanyamane sarire. A wise person sees the soul and knows that it cannot be killed by any weapons. So why Draupadi was in such distress? She was a great soul. But then again, we can ask why Arjuna was so weeping and so devastated upon the loss of Abhimanyu, his own son. And why is it that Narottam Das Thakur beats his head against the rock in anguish, feeling the separation of his beloved friends, Vaishnava friends like Srinivasa Acharya? And why amongst the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, when Rupa and Sanatan left their bodies, Lokanath Goswami and the others were so devastated in their hearts? And why is it that Srila Prabhupada, in a purport in the fourth canto, explains that when the spiritual master leaves, it is the duty of the disciple to weep and to cry in separation? When Krishna says, asochyanan vasochastvam pragyavadam shtapasas gathasum agathasum shananu sochandi, that the wise men lament for the living or the dead. And why Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, when Haridas Thakur left, he experienced such incredible emotions of separation from his devotee? Because Devotees by nature have very soft hearts. On one level, devotees cry when they see the distress of others. And also, devotees have their own natural relationships, and although they may have complete knowledge that we are not this body, we are the eternal soul, still, to be separated from great souls, even though that soul may not be dead, the separation from that person is naturally very painful to the heart. In fact, Ramananda Rai had the deepest, highest conceptions of Krishna's Madhurya Ras, the highest understanding of the absolute truth. He was speaking to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was practically the only person in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's whole life that he discussed openly the conjugal love affairs of Radha and Krishna. Srila Prabhupada said Swarup Damodar, Ramananda Rai were practically the only ones he went into great detail about this subject. And Lord Chaitanya himself said about Ramananda Rai that he was his guru, that he is the fit person, the only fit person really, to discuss such topics. But Ramananda Rai himself, in his most elevated state of consciousness during his conversation, when he was asked by Mahaprabhu, what is the greatest suffering? He said, to be in separation from Vaishnavas is the only suffering. This is not material. This is actually a very natural spiritual emotion. There's a story of Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur when he saw little children. He looked out his window from his quarters in Mayapur Dham, and he saw little children picking through the garbage trying to find something to eat. Prabhupada began to cry. Tears were flowing from his eyes. And with a choked voice, he told one of his disciples, who was in charge of Mayapur, that there should be, that we should have a food, we should prepare prasadam so that not a single person within miles of this temple is hungry. That is our principle. And from that day on, they started cooking food enough for everybody. Now one may think, why mundane sentiment? Hunger is a mundane thing. But when a great soul sees the pure soul of another that's part and parcel of Krishna having to suffer so many tribulations of this world, it pains his heart. And if you don't have that pain to see the sufferings of others, you cannot preach. You cannot be a preacher unless you can empathize with the pain of others. And there's only, and the pain that the preachers see are the pains of material conditionings. Because this, the soul of others is under the misconception that they are this material body, and due to that misidentification and illusion, they engage in so many ignorant activities which create such karmic conditions which culminate in suffering, in birth and death. This is not just sentimental. This is compassion. Vaishnavas have such soft hearts. But it is not simply on a sentimental basis. It is with knowledge. We are crying, why this soul doesn't come to Krishna? Why doesn't this soul come out of the suffering condition that they're in? And it is this type of weeping for the sufferings of others that instills the empowerment by which we can preach Krishna consciousness. So, when we see such great souls in this condition, it is actually a decoration which makes their devotional service beautiful. Because Draupadi, so Draupadi naturally was weeping because her children were dead. She was feeling separation from the souls of those children. And Arjuna, he was also one of his own children. One child, one son, and four nephews were killed. And he was also very affected. But he had a different way of dealing with it than Draupadi. Draupadi as a mother simply wept. But Arjuna as a warrior and a Kshatriya, his response was, justice must be served. You live by the sword, you die by the sword. And Srila Prabhupada is explaining in this purport that it was perfect. It is the duty of a Kshatriya to make sure that justice is served. It is the necessity of society that such Kshatriyas are living in Krishna consciousness. So Arjuna is trying to pacify Draupadi in this way. And Draupadi is in a state where her heart is utterly broken at the loss of her five children. And the wonderful story that follows will be continued tomorrow. Is there any questions?
Drishtadyumna and Draupadi came out from the oblations of the fire. So that means their birth was divine. Then
not exactly divine. That, in other words, their births were special because they were devotees. But the fact that they were born out of fire is not divine, because Vritrasura was also born out of fire. You know the story? Vritrasura? When Indra conquered the demons, they performed a yajna for a child to be born who will kill Indra. And the greatest demon, Vritrasura, was born of that fire. But the Brahmin, Tvasta, chanted the mantra wrong. He chanted the mantra. Instead of saying, that's why these yajnas are very delicate, because every mantra has to be perfect. I can't remember the exact Sanskrit, but I can tell you the translation. That he meant to say that from this oblation, a son will be born who will kill Indra. But he mixed his words up, and what came out was, will be killed by Indra. And Vritrasura was a very great demon, but ultimately was killed by Indra. So it's not that just because you're born out of fire due to some mystical sacrifice that it's divine. It's certainly mystic, but not necessarily divine. What is your question?
Maharaj, Drishtadyumna's death was very horrible death. It was very bad in that sense. So does that mean that even he had to suffer the laws of karma? Because he killed Dronacharya in a...
Mahabharata is a scripture that deals mainly with artha, kama, dhamma, and moksha. And Srimad Bhagavatam takes the same stories and explains them from the point of view of pure devotional service. And it's very important to understand this. From one point of view, for the Karmakandis, they will say, because he killed Drona in an unfair way, he died such a death. But from a higher point of view, we should know that it really doesn't matter how you die. The fact that he surrendered so much to being commander in chief of the army, which was Krishna's army, he went back to Godhead. He went back home, back to Godhead. For karmakandis, it's very particular how you die. You have to die at a certain time, in a certain place, in a certain situation, with certain astrological constellations. You're affected by all those things. But for a devotee, it simply doesn't matter how you die. If you've been pleasing to Krishna, you're going to go to Krishna. Prabhupada makes that very clear. For a devotee, death is always auspicious, because he's always serving Krishna, always thinking of Krishna. So from a Vaishnava point of view, we only see what service he has done. He did great service. Yes.
Acharya is also considered a pure devotee.
Dronacharya
is also considered a pure devotee.
He's considered a very exalted soul. And he was an associate of Krishna. That much we know. And therefore we offer all respects. It doesn't really say whether he's pure devotee or not pure devotee, but he was part of Krishna's Leela. He was an associate of Krishna's Leela. So he's a very, very exalted soul. And we must accept him as such. Because he was playing his part according to Krishna's plan. Thank you very much, Haribo.
You said about speaking the truth at any cost. And then sometimes,
if you want to develop love and trust amongst your God brothers and God sisters, you must do that. If you try to trick them to get your way, you ruin your trustworthiness in their minds. And by doing that, you're ruining the movement, because this movement is depending on trusting relationships. So we should not be so selfish. Yes?
Sometimes we, you wonder what, they may not be able to take it rightly, so let me wait for some time and tell them in a way, appropriate time. And sometimes, maybe
that
you wonder.
That is not being untruthful. That is being sensitive. We should be sensitive. But we should not outward lie to people and tell them one thing when something else is there. Unless under extreme circumstances you do it really for that person's benefit. But you should be very experienced, advanced devotee before making such, thinking you have that authority. But if you're really doing it exclusively for that person's benefit, then it is acceptable. But if you're doing it just to get something done or for your own benefit, then it will create something very negative in the future. From one point of view, you simply won't have any friends. You simply won't have friends. Because unless somebody can trust you, you can't really be their friend. It's not very deep. Friendship is based on trust. And for your own survival in Krishna consciousness, you have to have intimate friendships with Vaishnavas. Otherwise, you'll not survive in Krishna consciousness.
You hesitate. Does it mean that you're attached to what you think about what they feel about you? Is it something like that? Sometimes you hesitate to speak because they may not take it, or maybe we feel that we are not right persons?
Not necessarily. You should honestly be aware that you are not exploiting, that you have no personal motivation. You should present the truth in such a way that it is helpful for another person's devotional service. That is, you should not lie. You should present the truth in such a way that it is helpful for a person's devotional service. Like there is some time back, one very, very great devotee, he was on his deathbed, and somebody who was very dear to him was killed. So the devotees did not tell him. Why should his mind be disturbed by the killing of somebody who was very dear to him? Why not just let him very peacefully leave this world thinking of Krishna? So they didn't tell him. That was an act of love. That was not untruthful. That was an act of love. They didn't lie to him. They just didn't tell him. Out of love. So we should speak the truth. And we should speak it according to time, place, and circumstance in a way that it is most constructive for people's spiritual progress. In a way that we could best serve. Arrivo. Hmm?